This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Friday morning to you. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM Channel 158. Gil Alexander, Kelly Midland.
Hey-o.
And that is a... How you doing, man?
Good, man. Happy Friday.
Quarter zip from Kelly.
It's a little chilly out. A little chilly.
It is. The weather here is spectacular.
Yes, I will take this. All summer. I'll take it all summer. That's what happens, right?
What this place think it is? California? It is beautiful. Unseasonably mild.
Yeah.
Here in Vegas. Don't say it too loud because it'll change. On the show today, Paul Carr, Champions League. We'll get to that this hour. MLB most wins month of June. These are not up anywhere but William Hill Caesars. I went through 6-5-4-3 yesterday in terms of my choices. I'll repeat those today. But today, the reveal of 2-1, and I only bet one, the top one. And we'll get to that. Most wins June. We'll also take a look at May, the last update of May before we get out of here for the weekend, because we got three more days of May. Special numbers game investigation reveals that June begins on Monday. And so we have three games. All the teams at the top have three games left, and you can still bet that at DraftKings. Can't bet June yet at DraftKings, but you can bet May adjusted at DraftKings.
Hmm.
Sort of like the third leg of that PGA championship arc at the end of the year, the FedEx. We're on the third tournament. It's like a staggered start where certain golfers have strokes on others.
The Tour Championship.
The Tour Championship. Thank you.
Yep.
And then, of course, because it is a Friday, Felica and Fezzik, Chris Felica, World Cup and more. Steve Fezzik, a lot on his mind this morning. A lot on his mind for Steve Fezzik. And in between between Felica and Fezzik, Story Bonatoni, our own Story Bonatoni, on the Stanley Cup playoffs and specifically Carolina, Montreal, and how she feels about the Vegas Golden Knights going up against either, but perhaps specifically Carolina. Conn Smythe thoughts as well from Stormy a little later on the show. Before we get to the game last night, tennis, there is no tennis left today. It was only two plays. A lot of chalk today. I thought it was all justified. 0-1-1, Kelly, for 1.18 units back to the books. Lost on Starodubtseva, -2.5 versus Wang Ziyu. She lost outright, by the way.
Oh, Yulia.
Yeah. I don't know what happened to Yulia this
morning.
Come on. Yeah. Not good. And then Marie Buskova, we pushed that one, +6 versus Mira Andreeva. Expected better in that one, but we couldn't quite get there. She loses 6-4, 6-2. So give a unit 0.18 back, but nothing left today. We'll just have to watch Hodar here on the show. He's down 2-1. And when does Djokovic start? Is that during the show today?
Well, let me check
just
that.
Started.
Just started.
Just
Thank
started.
You, Danny.
Thank you, Danny. Djokovic going up against Fonseca. So tennis from the French Open today.
You know what's going to be fun is when old Juan Manuel Cerundolo loses his next match, too.
Oh, it's very possible.
And you're like, yay.
It's very possible.
Way to go.
Remember, not our Cerundolo.
Not our Cerundolo.
That's the other Cerundolo.
Yep.
Last night, Game 6, Western Conference Finals. Will Hill was kind enough to have me on the Should Have Bet More podcast last night, and my comment was, this is the least competitive series I think you could ever see. Competitive in the sense that we're going to Game 7. What we all wanted to see, right? A collision course between the Thunder and Spurs all season long. And a best of 7 goes to 7. What more could you ask for? Well, maybe a little more entertaining basketball.
More competitive games, yeah.
Ever since Game 1, this has just been blowout city from that point forward, including last night, the proverbial must-win situation for the San Antonio Spurs to stay alive. Had to do it. Did it. 118-91. A easy-peasy win. The total goes under, by the way. But Spurs cash easy for bettors, and we extend to Game 7, which will be tomorrow night back in Oklahoma City. The winner, of course, will take on the New York Knicks. San Antonio went up 9-2 early on three threes, one by Castle, two by Wemby. He had a block shot in there as well. Kelly texting everybody, show him God mode, Wemby. You OKC would cut it to 14-13, then a 12-4 Spurs run on four threes, two by Vassell, one by Johnson, one by Harper. Got it to 9, then it went up to 13 by the end of the first quarter, punctuated by another Wemby 3, a record-setting 8th made threes by the Spurs in the first quarter, up 13. They'd get it to 15, but then a 16-7 OKC run to get it to a six-point deficit. San Antonio will get it back to 12. They led by 7 at the half. Wembanyama at halftime, 22 points on 9 of 16 shooting from the field, 4 of 8 from behind the arc. Dylan Harper, and I really felt like this was, I know he's been on the court.
Oh, yeah.
But this felt like the real return of Dylan Harper last night.
He looked like a different player last night, for sure.
12 points at the half, 5 of 6 shooting, 2 of 3 from behind the arc. San Antonio was shooting 50% from the field, 23 of 46. They were 11 of 25 from behind the arc, 44% at halftime. Wallace, Casey Wallace, led OKC at the half with 11. SGA had 10 on 4 of 11 shooting. Spurs 65-60, then 72-64. This is really what you need to know. 72-64 Spurs. They go on a 20-0 run. That's it. KD bar the door. They go up 28. 92-64. A span of time which featured 14 consecutive Thunder misses from the field, holding OKC without a point for 7 minutes and 27 seconds of game clock.
What is this, college basketball? Come on.
Kelly doesn't watch college basketball.
This isn't the NCAA tournament. I don't see the scoring drought bug pop up.
The Spurs scored 11 of that 20-0 run, 11 of those 20 points, unanswered points, when Wembanyama was on the bench. They led it 92-66 at the end of the third quarter. It was a 32-13 third quarter, lowest scoring quarter of the season for OKC. Fourth quarter, you didn't need to watch. League got back to as many as 28, never lower than 22. Starters for both teams were out, you know, before halfway through the fourth quarter. Katie barred the door. 118-91 Spurs. Wembanyama in 28 minutes, 28 points, 10 boards. He spent the final 9 minutes and 20 seconds on the bench. Harper with 18. Castle with 17 and 9 assists. SGA just 15 points on 6 of 18 shooting. 0 for 5 from behind the arc. And OKC in total, 36.8% from the field, 25% from behind the arc. We're going to 7. And Kelly, I guess the question for you is, do you feel any differently about these? Should anybody, whether you are on the OKC side of this or on the San Antonio side of this, feel any differently before right now as they did before game one?
Absolutely. In my opinion, absolutely not.
Yeah, I don't either.
I mean, it's also like I think in some of these, especially these last few games, like whatever teams lost, you're like, okay, well, I this is what happened.
Yeah. So
in OKC, the last two losses, it's been awful shooting. I mean, awful shooting numbers and yes. SGA problems. And you're like, okay, what happened in game five, right?
This is what happened.
OKC comes back home. Everybody makes their shots. So, yeah, I mean, look, a lot to talk about. But you setting it up that way also leads me to like, okay, I was on Spurs last few games. Okay, pick up a couple wins, one loss in that time. Look ahead to game seven, man. Like, picking a side in this game in game seven. Oh. There's nothing I'm going to be touching pregame. Like,
Just going to try to root my Spurs future in.
Yeah, man. We talked about this yesterday on the show. Like, yeah, it's been some ugly results in these games, ugly basketball at times, right? But like, you want to keep trying to remind people though too, that, like these teams are so good defensively too, right? Like, and I know that's tough to like, and we want to go over these SGA stats. Okay, he's got one of the better perimeter defenders in the league of Stephon Castle on him all game, and it's just, He's having problems. We haven't seen Wemby be able to put like multiple games together really consecutively. And I think if you're a Spurs backer, right, the biggest concern that we've seen from Wemby recently, it's been okay. Game you look tired, then you look good. Game you look tired, then you look good.
But you see, I think within that, what you're just saying there is people overreact way too much game to game, right?
Sure,
sure. They lost like game five. They got crushed. Everyone's like, "Oh, he really looks tired. Mm-hmm. Did he look tired last night? Do you think he's going to look tired in game seven?" I hate the sort of confirmation bias of that in retrospect. I really feel like as a guy, I feel like the Spurs. I just have a hunch the Spurs are going to win this. I do feel like the Dylan Harper return was in earnest yesterday.
Yeah,
he's been out there, but that was more Dylan Harper-ish yesterday. I think. Obviously, De'Aaron Fox looked better. He looks a little more spry. And Jalen Williams, J-Dub, could only go 3 minutes at a time in game six.
I was very confused by their decision to bring him back for that game. If that's what his output...
If that's what the plan was.
Yeah, that's what his output was going to be. You're gonna
three minutes at a time,
10 minutes in total.
3 minutes at a time and is like, very odd.
When you're up 3-2, yeah. Right, to push him in the game six, not just save him for game seven, or we didn't see him in game five for some reason. I thought that was a little odd. I guess I'll disagree with you on De'Aaron Fox. I thought De'Aaron Fox still looked like he missed his first seven shots. There was a couple times though I saw him like go like take it to the basket and like looked like he was hesitant to even like jump off of that leg. But he's dealing with multiple injuries on a leg. I hope that Dylan Harper is coming back on his way up and that continues to rise and there's no setbacks going forward because, God, it's fun to watch and he's playing well.
Spurs are going to have to not only beat the Thunder, though, they're going to have to beat that home court whistle, right? They're going to have to do please don't get in the way, refs. Please, for God's sakes, fouling or getting somebody in foul trouble of consequence. It's a 3.5-point spread for Game 7. It's the lowest of all the OKC home games in this series. And so that's what it will be Game 7 tomorrow night. The winner will take on the Knicks. As far as Western Conference MVP, Western Conference Finals MVP last night, obviously if it's the Spurs, it's going to be Wembanyama. There's not a path for anyone else. If it's the Thunder that win tomorrow night, I felt like, and I was talking to Will about this last night on the podcast, I felt like even with SGA only having 15 points on 6 of 18 shooting, I still feel like that was a negative for Caruso last night, who ended up with seven points.
Yeah, at best, if you're a Caruso backer like Will or me, at best it's a wash. It's nothing, and we will be decided in Game 7. But I'm with you. I think he needed to do more last night.
The problem is the more you drift away from his good performances, and he's two of the six games, he's kind of been a no-show.
Yeah, yeah.
The more you drift from that, the less likely voters will be. So essentially, what I feel is for him to win it, OKC's got to win, and he's got to actively have another great game.
He has to be.
Whereas I think last night you might have gotten away with it had OKC won, if he was kind of meh-ish. But I don't think you can get away with that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I think you were going to need one good game out of him regardless.
Maybe.
So
we'll never know.
And look, if inefficient games keep piling up for SGA, that was part of the handicap.
Yep. Coming back, more props, more potential props here for the NBA Finals. And more. It's a numbers game at VSiN. You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. VSiN Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSiN Pro.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
20 leagues, one mission. Just Win Bets, baby, is your premier source for daily sports betting picks. They break down the data so you can bet with confidence across the entire sports calendar. Scan the QR code or visit justwinbetsbaby.com today and start betting smarter with Just Win Bets, baby. The name says it all. My man on the right there, didn't it look like a little Bobby Bacala they got in the animation right there?
It would be the great Joe DeFan there.
That's right, Joe DeFan. You can scan the QR code for more. You know who was on the Just Win Bets Baby podcast this week?
Who?
Paul Carr, who joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. He is the czar, the emperor, over there at True Media Networks. He joins us now from a low-budget hotel at an airport somewhere where it's really well-lit. Look at this guy.
Look at the artwork.
The eyebrows have never been darker. The lighting is fantastic. Where are you, Paul?
I'm in Kansas City. I'm about to head to Charlotte to cover a U.S. men's soccer game this weekend. They're playing Senegal in a World Cup friendly.
Should be fun. What's your opinion on the friendlies? Who do you imagine doing?
I mean, they're necessary, like a necessary evil. These are a little bit different because it's pre-World Cup. Like, we've got our actual roster here. Now we're ideally going to start to play them together, play the style formation we want to play. And U.S. has a couple good opponents. So these are different. But the other ones, you know, like in the fall or something, when they're relatively random, sometimes those are tough because it's maybe not the A team. There's no big picture purpose sometimes, but they're just kind of, you have to do it because you still need to get the team together around the coach and all that stuff.
All right. I have several questions, by the way.
All right, let's go.
Let's start with the listener question. This is again from Ice Goon. My question, he says, this season, the Premier League sent a record 9 teams to next year's European competitions. Villa and Palace already both won Europa Leagues this season, or won both Europa Leagues, I should say, this season. Is this incredible strength of the league something to push us to Arsenal tomorrow in the Champions League final?
I mean, the strength of the league is definitely a thing, because you mentioned Villa and Palace. I mean, Palace finished 15th in the Premier League, and they won, and it's like the CBI of European soccer, but they still won it and beat some good teams on the way. Same for Villa. They're a fifth place, fourth place Champions League team in Premier League, but they won the Europa League. So on the whole, I think it matters. For this specific matchup, I don't think it does, just because PSG is, they're at that level and they have, as much or more money than any Premier League team to buy whomever they want. So yes, on the whole, but Arsenal was not, they won the league, but they're not head and shoulders above everybody else to the extent that it makes me rank them that far ahead of PSG coming into this matchup.
Kelly mentioned something off air, which I thought was interesting. How did you phrase it? Is this the least sort of anticipated Champions League final because the World Cup is so close to this?
It's like the biggest soccer game on the planet.
Yeah, it's definitely getting overshadowed. Plus, Arsenal won the Premier League title already, so they have a trophy, so there's not as much pressure on them in that sense. But yeah, I mean, most of the national teams have called in the guys. A lot of them are in camp. Some have had friendlies already. Eyes are already looking toward the World Cup. So it is a little bit, oh, by the way, we've got the biggest club match of the year coming up this weekend, and it's definitely getting overshadowed by the biggest sporting event of the year of a four-year cycle coming up in 2 weeks.
All right, so how are you playing this?
Man, so, I mean, this is the classic, immovable force against irresistible object or whatever I'm trying to say, unstoppable force, immovable object.
Something like that.
Yeah. These two teams are good at opposite things is what I'm trying to say here. PSG is maybe the best counterattacking team in the world, best team in transition. They thrive on the chaos of everything. They want to hit you on the break. If you watched any of that matchup against Bayern, especially the first leg, they're just trying to find the open spaces and run, fast break team as much as you can be in soccer. Arsenal's the complete opposite. They're built on defense. They have the best defense in the world, maybe the best club defense I've seen, definitely in the last decade or so. And they're designed to stop, to thwart whatever the opposing team wants to do and to limit those transition opportunities. And they've done that this year. They've given up the fewest shots in the Premier League, the lowest shot quality. They just don't give you chances out on the break. They haven't allowed a goal from open play in six knockout games in this tournament. So that's the way it kind of sets up from a watching standpoint, from an on-the-field standpoint. It's just your classic good offense, good defense matchup. And it's going to be pretty fascinating to see, who blinks, which one can win here.
Arsenal plus 220 versus PSG. Also, both teams scored no.
Yeah. So PSG's favorite here, minus 145 to lift the trophy, which is different than win in 90 minutes because this can go to extra time and penalties. I don't think the gap is that much between PSG and Arsenal. And if I have to trust one of these units, either PSG's attack or Arsenal's defense, I will take Arsenal's defense here. They've, again, proven themselves the best in the world this year. They push you to places you don't want to be on the field. Their positional awareness is just as impressive as anything. The way they rotate, the way they move defensively and clog up the open spaces. So they're going to try and grind out a 1-0 type of win. I mean, if you told them it's scoreless in the 60th minute, they're thrilled about this. This is what they thrive on, what they've been doing all season. I played Arsenal to win at plus 220. That is a 90-minute bet. So, I'm betting they can find one goal. It's, decent chances on a set piece because that's what Arsenal does, led the league in set piece goals this season, and PSG's just been kind of average defending set pieces. So Arsenal plus 220, that's a really good price, I think, for 90 minutes. So I have Arsenal plus 220. Both teams to score, no. This is a, throw up in your mouth a little bit kind of play because PSG may just, there's always a chance they just rip this one open and are hanging multiple goals like they did against Inter in the final last year. But again, Arsenal's going to try to control things. It's going to be hard for PSG to find space in the box or space in transition. So, and even if PSG does get a goal for this play, can Arsenal get one back? Because, they've shown all season they're not the best either at when they have to go get a goal at going to get a goal. So, I have Arsenal to win, plus 220, both teams to score, no, plus 105. All kind of goes toward the same game story of Arsenal keeping this one tight and trying to pull it out by one.
I like it. Well described there by you. Let's go to the World Cup. Before we get into, we're going to rehash some of your picks. You have one to add here as well, I believe. And we were joking, the World Cup better happen, and it does happen in 13 days because Paul's going to have a million bets if this thing doesn't start already.
There's nothing like this from a sporting perspective. You got 6 months of buildup since you get most of the matchups.
Yeah.
And not all the plays are available, but more and more are coming online every week. So yeah, they keep suckering me in. We need to get this thing started.
We need to get it started.
I'm firing today. I'm ready. I've got World Cup fever. Right.
We did our college baseball bets.
I did college baseball
now
yesterday.
Now it's our time for the World
Soccer
Cup.
Soccer today.
before we rehash those and get your additional one, French Open's going on this week. Obviously, most famously, Yannick Sinner up two sets. He's up 5-1. He cannot take the heat. He loses to Juan Manuel Cerúndolo, not even the better of the Cerúndolo brothers. You know, some folks were calling it the biggest upset in sports history. It wasn't even the biggest tennis upset in history, but I get the idea that it's in the conversation. But it's about the heat there in Rome, middle of the day. And you made this point, which I think we need to repeat about the World Cup. You know where I'm going. Could you please repeat it for everybody who might have missed it?
Yeah, I mean, look, there are games in Miami and Dallas and Houston and L.A. And, I mean, really anywhere in the U.S., New York, Philly, Boston, whatever. Breaking news, it's hot in June and July in those cities. I mean, pretty much anywhere in the U.S. And you always hear from any European player, especially, who comes over to MLS and they play here. And they always just come like, man, like the heat here in the summer is just a different level than it is in Europe for the most part. So I think, you know, that's obviously going to disproportionately affect European players. And so I'm very curious. I mean, they're going to have water breaks. You have six subs. So it is a little different than it used to be. But I feel like the teams from this hemisphere are just going to be a little bit better suited to deal with that. And it's also going to favor the better teams who just have better players. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about how France could have a whole second team here that might make the semis or something like that. So that's going to come into play because there are more games in this tournament. There's got to be eight if you get to the final instead of seven like previous years. So it's going to be a little harder in that sense for those mid-tier teams to make a deep run because they don't have as deep a bench.
Climate, hemispheric bets. I could see myself making a few of those in this World
Cup. We're going to talk you into those for sure.
This is the greatest contribution of World Cup betting, Paul, since producer number three, the great Jorge Mondaca, colloquially known as Georgie Bueno, used to bet World Cup bets by turning his back to me, looking up at the anthems being sung, and betting the side that he felt sang their anthem more passionately. Bueno. Oh, shout out.
Probably had a lot of Italy back then.
That's right.
Doesn't have to worry about that at this tournament. They're not here again.
All right. Here's Paul Carr's World Cup bets. France to win the title plus 750. Ecuador to win Group E at 4-1. Colombia to win Group K plus 250. Panama to advance plus 225. I'm going to skip the next one. Rapinoe to win the Golden Boot, 33-1. And then Mikel Oyarzabal win the Golden Boot.
Or a Thabel.
Sorry, pardon me, the Castellano Thabel.
Right.
Win Golden Boot at 30-1. You did add that Scotland to finish last in Group C bet there?
Yeah, so Group C here. So the real question here, because Group C is Brazil, Morocco, Haiti, and Scotland. So Brazil and Morocco were clearly the two best teams, and they're going to get the top two spots. So it really comes down to Scotland and Haiti. So this a little bit goes back to the climate thing that we were talking about in the sense that obviously Haiti is from here. Their players use the heat a little more. These two teams play in the first game of their group. So, you know, if Haiti wins that game, that pretty much relegates Scotland to last place right there. So it's almost a bet on that. And then, you know, assuming Scotland can't upset Morocco or Brazil, and I don't think they can. I don't think Scotland's quite as good as they'll get hyped up to be just because they're a British team. So, yeah, plus 700. I love that.
Brazil, Morocco, Haiti, and Scotland, as Paul said, in group number C. Just gotta let Haiti get by them. That's the key to this one.
Let's go, Haiti.
7-1.
Let's go. I'll be tailing most of these, right. So let's go.
Paul, thank you. We'll talk a couple times more, at least one time more, before the World Cup begins. Appreciate it.
All right.
Paul Carr, everybody. Coming back with MLB most wins in June.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The clock is ticking on one of the best VSiN Pro offers of the year. Sunday is the final day to get a full year of VSiN Pro. Normally, $240 for just $199. When you sign up now, we'll give you two extra months for free. That's 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day with promo code PRO. You'll get daily best bets from VSiN hosted guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Zirka, AI-powered prop tools and matchup analysis, 24/7 live video plus full show replays on the VSiN Watch app, plus all of our special edition betting guides for every major sport throughout the year. The offer expires on Sunday. Don't wait. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe. Use promo code PRO. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. We get tweets beating the book. Jim Campbell, after listening to the World Cup segment with Paul, specifically on his handicap of Scotland finishing last in their group, there's an option on DraftKings to lose all games in the group where Scotland is 16-1. Seems like good value, he says.
I agree.
Ooh, that's a Kelly bet right
there.
Yeah,
that was one I was already going to tail Paul on, but I think that's worth adding.
Doug Tuttle, I'm seeing 25-1 on the Astros at Caesars. For whatever reason, they seem to get hot in June and have a pretty easy schedule. Yeah, they were on my list. And we won on Houston. We cashed in June 2 years ago on Houston, both at 17-1 and 25-1. Michael Salvino, I got to go Spurs money line. Me too, Michael. Got to, he says. Good luck to everyone. I don't think I'm going to bet it, but I think that's going to happen. I think they're going to win. Joseph Frieda, question for Fezzik today. Are the New York Knicks this year's Honky Tonk Man team? Okay, well, we'll have to ask Fezzik about that. Chance Copperpot, as a Thunder hater, I can fully agree Presti's the best GM in sports. He came out of the Spurs organization under Pop and R.C. Buford. Presti found Tony Parker and became the Supersonics GM at 29 years of age. Mm-hmm. John Schneider is the second best GM. I once hopped on a call with R.C. Buford. You know who set that up once?
Who?
Jimmy Vaccaro.
Really?
Back in the early South Point days of Beeson, yeah. R.C. Buford. Yeah.
Need to swing by the South Point.
Yes.
I haven't been over there in a while. I saw a cracked hot dog video yesterday, and I was like, in the back, I was talking about how working in local news, you'll never eat more cake in your life because someone's got a birthday or something every week that you're celebrating. And then I think I ate more hot dogs in a 2-year span or something at the South Point than I ever have in my life.
And good for you, by the way.
Very good for you. Yeah. Very good for you.
Let's give Chris Felica a crack at this question that was asked by Ice Goon earlier. Chris Felica joins us once again, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow Chris on Twitter, by the way, Chris Felica. That's clever. F-A-L-L-I-C-A.
And check out the latest Bear Bets pod like I did this morning. World Cup preview.
Yes.
Let's go.
I'm trying to get Chris and Paul to do a World Cup beating the book, but the man's busy. We'll see if it happens or not. Here's the question once again.
Well, I am busy. I'm trying to find the appropriate time for you and Paul, being that Paul has travel issues on Thursday. I have a travel issue on Wednesday, and I have my own little Bear Bets show that I need to record on Tuesday. So I'm trying to find the appropriate time where I can accommodate
you.
And make this happen, because I want to make it happen from the 2010 FIFA World Cup South Africa research triumvirate here. The dream team of Paul and I down there going to Monte Cassino with the Vuvuzelas there.
I'm so
black
jealous.
Cabs in the middle of the night that break down on the road. We can get into it on the – I'm making Kelly jealous of his wanting to be there in South Africa at the at the World Cup like he was saying.
Yeah, I wanted to be your AP or something for that.
I am sorry.
That was great.
But you didn't have to chastise me. Did you ever see the Justin Timberlake where he said that when he got punked? He's like, hey, God, you didn't have to chastise me. Okay, here's the question from Ice Good, Chris. I said this season the Premier League sent a record 9 teams to next year's European competitions. Villa and Palace already won both Europa Leagues this season. Is this incredible strength of the league something to push us to Arsenal tomorrow? And you have a college football analogy for us on this.
Yeah, it's not for me. Because you said there are a lot of Americans who aren't familiar with all of the international leagues and saga. I kind of make the Premier League as like the SEC. It is the deepest. It is the strongest from one to whatever. And Paul had mentioned Palace, where they finished and wind up winning the Conference League there. However, you've got these, like the Big Ten has 3 teams at the top that were better than anybody in the SEC. The ACC had a team at the top in Miami that was better than anyone in the ACC. The Big 12 had a really good team in the top of Texas Tech. So that's kind of how I feel that it is with, like, in the Bundesliga, you got Bayern Munich, and then in France, you've got PSG. PSG, I think, is the best team in the world. I like them to lift the trophy. I think they have so many different answers offensively that they can use and score. And it's weird. There's been I'm tight with a couple of Arsenal friends of mine. There's this weird vibe that they have about, like, the Champions League is kind of like this free roll now, mm-hmm. being that they did win the Prem. So I don't know mentally where they maybe it's at the fan thing and not a team thing, but it seems like Arsenal might, like, be just kind of happy they won the Prem and kind of whatever happens tomorrow happens. But I like PSG to lift the trophy.
Here are the World Cup bets that Chris has made on the show prior to this appearance. And I will ask him here, which does he like the best and which does he already regret terribly? Jeremy Doku to win Golden Boot, 80-1. Belgium to reach the quarters, Doku's side, at 2-1. Spain to reach the quarters, -145. Portugal to reach the quarters, +125. Morocco, remember that one, he got frisky, with Morocco to win Group C, +325. And then the tandem bet of Spain and France, both to reach the final. They're on the same side of the bracket.
That's what it was. Okay.
Spain's +220, France's +300. And then apparently there's no logo for Group E. They don't have logos per group. So it's highest scoring group at 6-1. Which of these do you feel the best about, and which of them are you like, oh, I don't know. I can't believe I
Portugal to reach the quarter is the one I feel best about, because I do think despite the group that they're in, the challenge that they could have in winning that group, you win that group, you get a dream run in the round of 32 and the round of 16 to get to the quarterfinals. So that is the one that I do feel the best about.
Okay. And you're feeling good about all of them. None of them are like, you're not.
I am feeling good about all of them. I know, look, the Belgium play is a price play. I mean, look, Morocco, there actually was a 5-1 out there. I mean, that's a handicap that I made, and maybe Morocco can get a point against Brazil in the first match and go out there and win that group. But yeah, I mean, obviously, do I expect Jeremy Doku to win the Golden Boot? No, but at 8-1, I kind of made the path and the argument for Belgium. So yeah, I feel pretty good about that.
All right. Well, it isn't for another 13 days. Would you like to add some bets to this? What do you got?
Oh, we're going to add more bets today. We're going to add more bets next week. Related to Group E, I'm going to take a little stab with it. Ivory Coast to win Group E. It's 7-1. I know Paul had made a case for Ecuador in that group as well. So I'm going to – I think the elephants are low-key loaded here. They have a bunch of young talent with Diallo, Yaya Diamande, Evan Gassan, Frank Kessie. They've got really young, talented players and a couple of veterans in there like Kessie and some of the guys on defense that can really mold this team. And look, Germany is a side where they have had flop after flop lately on the international level. Now, I know there's a new manager. I know it's a new team that they've kind of blended in some younger guys like Wirtz and Musiala, and they got to the quarters in Euros a couple of years ago when they hosted. But look, again, we talked about Toronto, Canada in July. It could be very warm, and that's something that I think could favor some of these South American, African sides as well that are used to playing in some of these extreme temperatures. So, look, I think Ivory Coast is live. I think Paul has a great bet handicap for Ecuador as well. You win the group here, you get a third-place side in the round of 32, and then you likely get Norway if you finish second. So I think if Ivory Coast can either win the group or get second in the group and then get Norway on the other side of the bracket, like, you've got a chance to advance. And while a team like Morocco is better than the Ivory Coast, they get a much more difficult draw where they're probably going to have to play the Dutch in their first knockout round match. And that is a much more difficult matchup. So I think there's a little bit of value on Ivory Coast here to advance the furthest of any AFCON team.
Okay. 7-1 for them to win Group E, 6-1 for them to be the top AFCON team. And then I love when you make these bets, because this requires a little bracket analysis here. England round of elimination quarterfinals +375. What you're thinking there?
We hit on it a little bit last week. And again, this is kind of a weather-induced play, climate-induced play, where England, if they win their group, Mexico, if they win their group, you're going to get a round of 16 game at Azteca in Mexico City, England-Mexico, which would be just brutal heat at that elevation. However, it isn't a lock that Mexico win their group. This is not a great Mexico team, but if they were to win the group and get there, they'd have a good chance. And you can kind of play Mexico there to beat England to kind of hedge your bet here. But if England were to advance there, regardless of who they play, their quarterfinal match would be likely against Brazil in Miami. And you talk about another heat, humidity, hostile environment. The number of Brazil fans that will be there in Miami will be through the roof. So I can't see England getting past the quarterfinal. So I'm going to bet them to lose in the quarter. And then if they wind up playing Mexico in the round of 16 at Azteca, I could always put a little bit on Mexico there to kind of go against the create a little self-created arb there that they lose one of the next two games.
And you will be prominent in World Cup coverage this summer, right? Front and center.
I know I will be doing my podcast, and I will have plenty of coverage on FoxSports.com. Other than that, I don't know. We'll leave it at that.
Tune in and find out.
Wow, okay. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend.
You too. Are we sure? Next on A Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on A Numbers Game, live from Circa Resort Casino, downtown Las Vegas. Gil Alexander, Kelly Midland.
Hello.
In the hizzy. After our show, which happens at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, Prop Points joins us for an hour on the network. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson. And then after that, it is Money Moves, hosted by Stormy Bonatoni. She has made some extra time for us this morning. Talk some Stanley Cup playoffs. She joins us now courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Stormy, good morning to you.
What up? How are you guys this morning?
Doing very well. By the way, if you want to follow her on Twitter, go Storm Bonatoni. Don't do Stormy.
Yes.
Apparently someone had Stormy Bonatoni.
Taken?
What happened?
No, we just reached the character limit. There's too many letters in my last name. So if I had to pick somewhere to take a letter off, that made the most sense, no?
Yeah, I suppose so. Bonatone would have been another option. I have a question for her. Before we get into all your picks here on tonight's game between the Canadiens and the Hurricanes, Hurricanes looking to close out the Canadiens, looking to take on the Vegas Golden Knights in the Stanley Cup Final. I'm curious, you cover the team. You obviously do work for ESPN and the NHL. It got back to us, and this didn't surprise me, but I was curious that it finally was sort of out there, that the Vegas Golden Knights and their fan base are not beloved throughout the land. Is this true, and how have you sort of soaked that information in? You've seen this with your own two eyes.
Oh, yeah. They're a villain of this postseason for sure now. But it's interesting because if you think back to year one, initially, there was so much love for the Vegas Golden Knights because if you didn't have a team, they could kind of be your team. There was obviously the expansion draft and like everybody called them the misfits. They're kind of these throwaways from other teams. And there was a lot of affinity for them. And then you think into the emotional element of it with what happened with October 1, the community rallying and how much people kind of fell in love with the story. Then they made the cup final and everyone's like, okay, well, that's a little jacked up. Like there have been lots of us that are waiting for decades to get back to that position. And it's year one, you get there. And then year after year after year, they continue to make the playoffs. They continue to find themselves in the Western Conference Final. They won a Stanley Cup and now they're in position to potentially win a second in 4 years. So people think that we're spoiled. People think that we are ungrateful for what we have as well. And then you have the Kelly McCrimmon and higher leadership cutthroat element of it all as well, that Vegas has certainly become, I think, pretty villainous throughout the course of the league. And then you look on the other side of the country right now in the Toronto Maple Leafs, for example, who really, really are frustrated because now Vegas has one of their own who has been exceptional in the playoffs and Mitch Marner when he wasn't able to do that with them.
One more gossipy question. How much does this franchise hate Bruce Cassidy that they won't let him interview with another team? What's going on there? What's the story?
I really, really feel for Bruce. And listen, he's doing the best that he can going out on all these different radio shows and podcasts and stuff like that, trying to make his case. And the fact that the Coaches Association has come out in support of him, I get 100% where he's coming from. But we've also seen the league come out and support Vegas being fully within their rights to do this. I always say it's the golden rule. He who has the gold makes the rules. And Vegas is paying Bruce Cassidy.
Yeah, they
Vegas
are.
Can do what they to while he's under contract. And Kelly McCrimmon, their general manager, was just on the radio yesterday saying the only reason this is a story is because Edmonton liked it and was very frustrated with that he's had conversations with Bruce, understands where he's coming from, but he is doing what he thinks is best for the organization. And it kind of is what it is. There's nothing else anybody can do about it at this point.
What I got from that answer, Kelly, by the way, how much do they hate him, was a lot. That's what I got from that answer. Yeah.
No, and it stinks because I disagree with it. It's bad form, but I also get it from Vegas' standpoint of the teams that are pursuing him are in your division. And that's going to be tough if Edmonton comes back with a new coach who's your old coach who you let go, and then they make a sick run in the playoffs.
Yeah,
good point. You know what I got from that answer? Is Kelly McCrimmon, welcome to the coolest of male Kellys. That's what I got.
How annoying is it when the two hosts of the show just to grade the answer right afterwards? I'm sure it's very annoying for the guests. All right, Carolina.
I'll allow it because it's you.
I'll allow it. Thank you. Thank you very much. Carolina, Montreal, game five. Carolina looking to close out the Canadiens and advance to the Stanley Cup final against the Vegas Golden Knights. If they do so, Stormy, this will be a 12-1 run to start the playoffs for the Carolina Hurricanes. How do you see this game? How are you betting it?
Yeah, they've been unbelievable. And I haven't bet a side in this. I do think that the Canes close it out. Selfishly, as someone who laid 1.5 games with Carolina in this series, I hope they do. But the way that they came off of that game 4 win, it was the first time we really saw the scoreboard reflect just how one-sided the play has been in favor of the Canes, because you have games 2 and 3 that end up being these 3-2 overtime games. If you're a Montreal fan, you really fully believe that you're just a shot away. But Carolina fully outplayed them. And you look in this last game, it's a 4-0 shutout. Carolina's 44 shots to Montreal's 18. The shot attempts edge was 95-45. Oh, and I've heard a handful of it's brutal. And I've heard a handful of people saying, look, there was always going to be a shot disparity in this series because of the way Carolina plays and Montreal is more quality over quantity. We're making too much of it. I say agree to disagree, because this has been a historically low shooting performance for Montreal. We have never seen in a 3-game span in the playoffs, or excuse me, dating back to the time it was tracked in 1959, we have never seen a 3-game streak in the playoff where there have been this few shots on goal from a team. And I think that's going to continue tonight, even if Montreal tries to come out guns a-blazing. What is that still for them? Like 18, 19, 20 shots? It's just, they're so fatigued right now too, that I think at this point in the playoffs, that's when that starts to really matter and take a toll. They've played as many games as you can possibly play in the playoffs. Both of their first round series go to 7. They've played in 7 overtime games as well, when you put that onto it. I just kind of feel like it's the end of the road. I wouldn't kill anybody for looking at, you know, an over 2-1 money line price on Montreal and saying, oh, it's a closeout game, anything can happen. Sure. I just won't be doing it.
And you have Carolina minus a game and a half in this series. So you're sitting pretty with that. You have a lean to the under. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, the way that Carolina defends, and I've been betting unders on the Canes all postseason. I don't really think I should stray away from it now. 10 of the 12 games that they've played have seen 5 or fewer goals scored. Betting the opposing team total under has been extremely profitable. I'm not even a Freddie Anderson girl. I have been so anti-backing him for Conn Smythe, and now, given some of my futures positions, I'm like, do I have to bet Frederick Anderson for Conn Smythe? He's got a 1.44 goals against average right now. It's just, everything tells me, again, and I go back to the fatigue element of it too, everything tells me that this is going to show up Carolina. And if Carolina is dictating play, that means it's going to be a lower scoring game. That very first game of this series, guys, we saw Montreal like being able to have some of those breakouts and slide through the neutral zone. Carolina was so rusty and couldn't get to their game. They have looked like a completely different group, like the one that swept the first 2 rounds over these last couple of games, just in terms of eye test and gameplay. And if that continues, then that means it's going to be another long day for Montreal in a low scoring affair.
Where do you stand beyond your Carolina minus a game and a half in this series? Where do you stand on all your futures? You're set up pretty good, right?
So good and bad, because I'm very pro Golden Knights. Like as a fan and somebody who lives in Vegas, I always bet Vegas to win the cup at the beginning of the year. So I have a 10-1 Golden Knights ticket.
Nice.
And then as we got into the postseason, we had a lot of the conversation of, if there is a world where Vegas beats Colorado, then Mitch Marner at 12-1 is in his insane price. So I fired on that as well. Carolina, meanwhile, is a team that I have bet for the last 5 years, Gil, to win the cup year after year. Eastern Conference Final futures. I didn't bet it this year because they've done me so dirty repeatedly. And now I don't know what to do to hedge. So if you have any advice, please let me know. I'm too heavy on Vegas and I need something on Carolina.
I think the clean way is Hurricanes win here, right? They beat the Canadiens either today or tomorrow or the next one, or today or 2 days, or one of these last 3 games, in other words. So you get a Hurricanes Golden Knights Stanley Cup final, and not to offend Vegas Golden Knights fans like yourself, but the Hurricanes will be favored in that series. And I think you just bet on the Hurricanes at that point on the money line on the series. It shouldn't be that big of a money line.
Yeah, that's the cleaner way.
That's the cleanest way.
I'd probably
bet
145 right now.
Or you bet Carolina. That's right. Or you don't even wait and you bet Carolina right now, minus 145. Ugh. But that does leave the Canadiens
sure does
open to kill you on both ends. So I would wait, personally.
Well, yeah. I would say the one good thing about that is that in the, I think, conference finals or semifinals, it's like once in 73 times ever in history has a team down 3-1 come all the way back. So maybe you're right. Maybe it should just be the minus 145 and just bite the bullet.
1-8-0, Stormy. 1-8-0. No, I think you're probably safe, but I'm just
or go
saying.
Half-half. Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. You're probably good. What could go wrong is what we're trying to say.
Yeah. Now that you've said I'm probably good, that means I'm definitely hosed. Montreal's going to win the next two, and then we'll have it'll be a whole thing.
Before you go, your bets aside, in your heart of hearts, do you think the Golden Knights win the Stanley Cup?
Oh, think they do? I want them to.
Think. We're asking.
That's all
think.
I'll give you right now.
Oh, that's all.
Wow.
Okay. All right.
That's find all out get. More on Money Moves.
That's right. Thank you, Stormy. Appreciate it. Stormy Bonatoni, everybody. Host of Money Moves, an hour after we're on. Steve Fezzik, next Fezzik Fridays.